You're watching Coaching After Dark with Auntie Isha, CA, Reese, and Coach Kim. We're the morning show for night shifters. Hey, hey, night shifters.
Get your food!
Get in the car!
Who? Get in the car? Get your food! If you say one more thing, I'm gonna knock you out. Oh my God, I'll say one more thing, I'm gonna knock you out.
Welcome back to another fantabulous episode of Coaching After Dark. CA is at a wedding. Reese is still on vacation. So you have myself, Coach Kim, and Auntie Isha. Today, we decided to take things on a serious note. We will be discussing the much talked about case of Isha Hood and her 14-year-old son. He was 14, right, Isha?
Yes, 14.
Yes. So we also have a special guest on the line, which I will be bringing in just a moment. He's been waiting very patiently because Auntie Isha and I, as you know, we can get off on our opinions all day long.
Yes.
Professional TV network and bring in some true, what do we want to call it? Other than professional. But, you know.
Expertise.
Thank you. There we go. Teamwork. Boom.
I got you.
So joining from the Duval County State Attorney's Office. Now he is off the clock. So everything he says is strictly personal opinion and based on Florida law only. I had to put that out there. And we'll say it again once he jumps on the line. But his name is Mr. Octavius Holiday. So let's bring him into the conversation. If I can figure this out, you guys know Isha and I are technology, right?
Womp, womp, womp.
Together, we will get it together. So viewers, the show, you saw, of course, our wonderful intro. Hope everyone liked our new intro. And we also showed a small clip from TikTok regarding what happened that sparked this controversial situation and case that everyone is buzzing about. So that said, let's go ahead and bring in Mr. Holiday. Let's see. Mr. Holiday, can you hear us yet?
I can hear you well. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hello and welcome.
Good evening.
And friends. Representing your cute dogs today?
Yeah, I am, in fact.
She's part of the show, as well as myself, Coach Kim. We have two other co-hosts, but it's summertime and it's hard to get our schedules together. So one is on a cruise to Alaska and another one is out of town at a wedding. So yeah. Of us, I hope that's okay. Good deal. We'll be talking about our own personal opinions, of course, and hopefully you can shed some light on the law. And I understand that you're in Florida, so it would be strictly based on Florida laws, any opinions that you share regarding. Right. We are talking about, of course, the Carlisha Hood case. So if you don't mind, Mr. Octavius Holiday, I will let Isha kind of come up from a layman's perspective, our view of what's going on with this topic, and then we can just jump.
Okay, you're going in and out on me a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
See, that's what happens when you try to sit outside and be cute. More steady now? No?
Now I can hear you, but you chopped up in the beginning of that sentence.
Okay, so Isha, let me make you the host so that you got more clear. All right. And Isha, if you don't mind, just give us a summary of the Carlisha Hood case from our perspective, just as commoners that see it on social media. Who is going to happen?
Absolutely. So I learned about this case just like everybody else. I was on TikTok. And the first thing I saw was the video. So with a little research, from what I understand, is that Carlisha Hood and her son entered a restaurant, almost like a hot dog stand. She was ordering food, and at some point, her and Jeremy, I believe it's Jeremy, don't quote me, y'all. I had it wrote down. What was it, Jeremy Brooks, was it? Was it Kim?
I don't, let me.
Okay, you're breaking up again, Kim. Okay, but anyway, her and Jeremy got into an altercation. At some point, Carlisha tells her 14-year-old son to go to the car. He goes to the car. At some point, he then comes back in after Jeremy has attacked her brutally. He walks in, sees his mother's being punched several times. And these were not just like, like these were punches, like grown man punches, like this lady was taken. He goes into his hoodie, pulls out a gun, he fires. He shoots Jeremy in the back. From there, they pursue Jeremy out of the door, and he shoots again. I believe he shoots, I think he shot two or three more times, and these were fatal shots. Jeremy dies. It was just so much controversy on TikTok because there were so many different reports coming out. There were reports saying that Carlisha instructed her son to go to the car and get the gun. There were reports saying that she texted him from inside of the restaurant to bring the gun in and shoot him. There were even the first reports before video actually came out that there was never an altercation. They were just arguing and her son came in and shot him. So it was like all these different opinions. And then we finally saw the video and realized what really had happened. And it was clear from the video to me when I heard her, what I heard to her say to her son before he exited the building and got into the car and got the gun, she was telling him to get out of there, go to the car, because the altercation was getting heated. So she wanted to get her 14-year-old minor out of the situation. He later came back in with the gun. And to me, looking at the video, of course, I'm not an attorney, but looking at the video, it looked like self-defense to me. She was being brutally attacked. This attacker was definitely threatening her life. I don't see how she would have gotten out of that without being unalived herself if he was not shot. So.
Okay. So, and I think social media as humans, you know, we're quick to, can y'all hear me okay?
Now, okay, yeah.
I know we're quick to jump to conclusions, especially when we're visual people. So when we see, we're quick to jump off of what we see. And I'm not saying that I disagree with you, Isha, I'm just going off of the mass reaction to it. So Mr. Holiday, as a professional in the criminal justice field, what is, usually when these stories come out on social media, what is your first reaction?
When you say stories, just stories about what?
I mean, not just Carlisha Hood, but Floyd, just all of the big name social media news outlets that get everybody all up. So for me.
Okay. So typically what I'll do is I do not respond or I don't make a decision or opinion right away. I want the investigation to conclude so I can know all of the facts, everything that the state has to bring against a person, potentially bring against a person, and then I'll have a legal opinion. So a lot of times what we do, that collect, I say we, collectively, social media driven, we jump right in and it had to be this, or it had to be that. We've had that happen a couple of times in Jacksonville. And I'll give those examples if you like, but we've had it happen a few times in Jacksonville. It had to be this, had to be that. People are protesting around our office, around the courthouse. And then when we release our evidence and our investigation, it just quiets down and, you know, it seems like wasted energy when everyone just should have just kind of held off, waited for the information to come out. So that's typically what I do. I'm a professional. I'm not sure if you gave an introduction, but I'm a prosecutor over the Human Rights Division in Jacksonville. So I prosecute hate crimes, officer-involved violence, elder abuse, human trafficking. So a lot of my cases do hit the paper pretty quickly, but ultimately, we can't make sound decisions inside the criminal justice system with all the evidence. So we're always praying and hoping that the community don't rush to conclusions as well. We'll just wait for the investigation. But I do know naturally, maybe not naturally, but just from a historical perspective, as far as being Black, being African-American, there's a distrust of law enforcement, distrust of prosecutors, judges, the criminal justice system as a whole. So we are, for lack of a better word, almost triggered from the beginning. If something happens that looks bad or sounds bad, we're all up in arms from the beginning. We don't want to wait to see anything else, really. But ultimately, most cases don't turn out the way we thought they were in the beginning. So.
Awesome. That was one of the points that I wanted to make sure we get across to our viewers, is that our conversation today, of course, it's based off of our personal opinions, right. But I want to stress that it's important for, no matter how bad it looks in a little 10-second, 15-second snippet that you see on TV or on social media, to evidence on your own as possible, research more before making a decision and burning somebody's house down, so to speak.
Right. But in this particular case, I think it was a good thing we had the video, because there were so many different reports coming from the eyewitnesses. Like it was almost criminal to me, the things that some of them said happened versus what really happened. Sure. And I don't think if we didn't have that video, there was a good chance that this young man and this lady's life could have been, everything could have went another way. They may not have been released if we did not have the video, based on the things the eyewitnesses were saying.
So, Mr. Holliday, as an attorney, in the state of Florida, had the situation happen? Because from what I understand, the son shot Jeremy in the building while he was attacking his mom, but then him out of the building and shot him a couple more times off of the premises of where the initial occurrence happened.
Sure.
So, that being the actual facts of the case in the state of Florida, would they'll be in jail or released?
They'll be facing charges. At least the son would be facing charges. From what I could tell, I couldn't see charging a mother unless you wanted to tie her in as a principal because the gun was available to the son. But he's a 14-year-old. It's not like a 5-year-old grabbing a gun. We charge people all the time. If a 5-year-old grabs a gun and does something criminal or manslaughter, whatever the case may be, we'll charge the adult for having not secured the firearm. But in this particular case, you have a 14-year-old. It seems like he's acting on his own accord now. Without instruction from the mom. So I don't see charging the mother. The son probably facing charges.
So I have a question. So in Florida, we do have the stand your ground laws.
Right.
At that point of how she was being attacked,
right,
stand your ground would not have assisted in this type of case?
It's a clear protection of others. Now, there's two questions here, though, right? And there's one that is super clear. But two questions. One, was it a defense of others? And was it a lawful defense of others when he shot him the first time? That's questionable too. Now, the guy is hitting his mother, right? Punching her pretty hard too, right? Is that deadly force? Now, so that's questionable. Is that deadly force or not? Some people say, oh yeah, he could have killed her. Most people aren't killed by punches, honestly. It can happen. I'm not saying it doesn't, but most of the time, fist on fist, when you escalate to a deadly weapon, a knife, so on standing ground, which is really just a tracking of our justifiable use of deadly force, you can meet deadly force with deadly force. So if the guy had a knife and threatened his mom, yeah, you come in and shoot him, right? But just punching her, escalating to a firearm is most likely illegal. Okay, but just given that said, you know what? Maybe the son couldn't rationalize that. The mother is getting hit pretty hard. We probably couldn't convince a jury that was an unlawful use of force. So we let the first shot go, okay? Now, as the threat is now no longer a threat and retreating and running away, is that self-defense? Is that justifiable use of force? Is that standing your ground? And it doesn't seem to be to me. We've had a similar case right in Pinellas County where it was opposite. There was a white guy who shot the black guy in the in our community. I just gotta be blunt about it. We tend to root, it's like, I think some type of, I forget what celebrity said. Yeah, who are you rooting for? I root for everybody black, right? So it seems like we're always on the black person's side, no matter what the situation is. This guy, this case has two African Americans, I get it. But in that case down in Pinellas County, you had a case where the white guy was yelling at a black woman. The black woman's boyfriend came out of the store, went to the white guy, punched him in the jaw to the extent that he got him, got knocked down. And then as the black guy who punched the white guy turns just slightly to leave, the white guy pulls out a gun and shoots. And then the sheriff's office came out immediately and was like, well, it's a standing ground case, we can't prosecute him. But when I first saw that case, I was like, I'll wait for everything to come out, but it looks like manslaughter to me. And the prosecutors decided to charge the guy and got convicted by jury, so he's doing his 30 years in prison. So you got to kind of divorce yourself from emotion. In this case, what we're talking about in Chicago, a lot of emotion in terms of a grown man punching a woman in a case that seemed to be a verbal argument of some sort, who knows, over food or whatever the case might be, but to go off and hit a woman. So I've seen a lot of comments about he got what he deserved, or you can't be hitting a woman like that, or whatever the case might be. Karma got him. Well, okay, I get all that. I get all that emotion, and I don't hit women, and I don't agree with people hitting women, and et cetera, et cetera. But legally speaking, from a sanitized point of view, very sober point of view, when that, I forget Jeremy, when Jeremy left the building, and you, if you can't show that he was going to get a gun, and he was close to a gun or close to a weapon, and you executed him basically from shooting from behind, by the letter of the law, that's going to be manslaughter at the least, and second degree murder at the most, probably. Now, can you put that in front of a jury? Because you already got an unsympathetic victim. You have a guy that was punching the crap out of a lady. Is the jury going to let him convict a 14-year-old kid? So maybe the state attorney's office up there went ahead and made that decision early. It was like, you know what? We're never going to convince a jury to convict this 14-year-old kid. And sometimes you got to do that. You know, in terms of the law, I always look at it this way. One, did they do it? That's the first question. Okay, yes. Two, can we prove it in this case? Most likely, yes, all right? And then the last part, I always say, do you care? But that really means, can we put it in front of a jury and get a jury to convict this person? And if the conclusion is, we probably can't get there, even if by the letter of the law, it's illegal, you gotta sometimes save the community the money and the time and the effort and let it go. And that probably was the case in this case.
Yeah. There was one other piece we haven't talked about. Allegedly, she...
Who was she?
Carlicia,
okay.
Instructed him to shoot the girlfriend also that was there with Jeremy.
Okay.
The son did not, of course, didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And he actually snatched the gun back and kind of pushed his mother to the car.
Right.
I have not seen that part of the video, so that's why I'm saying allegedly. But I'm glad that if this did happen, I am so glad, because probably at that point she had hit rage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's just be real. Right. Let's be human. She had hit rage. She probably felt like the girlfriend was encouraging it, laughing. Mm-hmm. And telling her boyfriend to, you know, do this.
Right.
And she instructed her son. So I'm glad he had enough sense, if this happened, to not shoot that woman. Because if he had, then he wouldn't have had anything to stand on at that point. He would be in jail for a murder.
So what if he had fired the shot and shot the girlfriend? Clearly, the girlfriend was never a physical threat.
Right.
Definitely not a deadly threat. And then, so the son gets charged. But the mother too, because I'm referring to Florida law. I don't know what the aiding and abetting or principal statute is up in Illinois, but in Florida, if you encourage, incite, promote, aid or assist somebody in committing a crime, you're just as guilty as the person who committed the crime. So that would definitely be encouraging someone, even instructing at this point, to commit the crime. Yeah. So they would both be charged with that. So I was surprised that the state attorney's office, I got a couple of good friends up there in Chicago from my undergrad days who are lawyers. I was surprised the state attorney's office let it go as quickly as they did, honestly. I'm not saying I was actually pretty pleased that they did let it go, but I was surprised. It's just not a common occurrence that we can prove it by law. We'll put a tough case in front of a jury, let the jury decide. But they decided to let it go. I don't comment on another jurisdiction's decision. I feel in Jacksonville, yeah, we'll put that in front of a jury. We've done it before, so.
Yeah. I'm glad they got off too. I'm glad. I am.
Yeah. I'm not saying I'm glad the guy got shot or killed. I'm not. But no, just look from a human person's perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're gaining much by prosecuting. I told you I don't think there could have been charges that stand against the mom, but I don't think we're gaining much by prosecuting a 14-year-old either.
A 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. With such a promising future. He has such a good background. AB honor roll student, college bound. You know, I'm glad that his life didn't go to the penitentiary.
Right. even though there's, we don't talk about this too much, even he didn't have to be charged as an adult necessarily. You know, okay. Court of law, you know, you don't, we don't have to charge as an adult. You know, we had the Chris Fernandez case here when the Hispanic kid, he was 12 years old, he killed his brother. We put him in adult court for a while and eventually worked out a juvenile disposition. So there was all kinds of ways, to deal with it on the juvenile level too, if it needed to. But no, I was pleased. I was surprised and pleased, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Y'all were. Yeah. So you're not getting what we feel is justice. I think we were all surprised and pleased.
Right. Now we do have, if I remember correctly, we got an African-American state attorney up there. And race might matter, you know, in terms of making those kinds of decisions. And I felt she was listening to the public, you know, I believe it's a she, listening to the public. And, you know, that's important. Even in our office, we try to have an ear to the ground and make sure we are on the same page. You don't let the public dictate how you do your job, but you definitely want to know what their opinion is. I think it was overwhelmingly in support of not charging these two individuals. So, again, I was surprised, but pleased.
So speaking of, since you are a prosecuting attorney, mm-hmm. how much of a part does social media play in most of your cases when it comes to picking a jury?
How much does social media play? Like in terms of, have they heard of the case and that kind of thing?
Exactly. The exposure of the case and the access to social media and the public form prior to it even reaching court status.
Well, if they're on the jury and they've heard of the case, they can't be on the jury. So we have to find people who've been under a rock inside the county. And the way the law is, you have to try to pick the jury. You say, what's the most famous case in Jacksonville? I don't know. What you think the most? Maybe Rich Alexander was pretty popular.
Yeah.
The Michael Dunn case, right? So say the Michael Dunn case when he killed Jordan Davis. Well, if they had heard of the case, then they're pretty much off the jury at that point. I mean, the next question is, even though you heard of the case, can you be fair and balanced and unbiased in the case for the defense or against the defense or for the state against the state? But even then, they can be shaken off the jury because they might have been influenced by social media. A lot of people lie, though, I'll be honest. A lot of jurors just lie. They want to be on the jury. They have an agenda, and they get themselves on the jury. But no, technically, by the rules, if you heard about the case in the social media, you're not supposed to be involved in the case. And then if we can't pick a jury in Jacksonville, if it happened in Jacksonville, then we have to have the governor appoint another prosecutor, another circuit, and take it. That's what happened with the Zimmerman case. Zimmerman case was happening down in Sanford, but it was prosecuted by our office up here from Jacksonville based on some type of conflict, you know, from down there.
Wow. Now, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So let's just say that this case went a different way and they were prosecuted.
Okay.
Jeremy's background with being abusive towards women,
okay,
it's a little colorful.
Okay.
There's allegedly he actually tried to burn down his girlfriend's apartment prior to this incident. Would that have been allowed in the courtroom to show how dangerous he was?
You're talking about during trial or during some kind of sentencing?
Trial. Like, if could that have been brought up?
If you can, it's called reputation evidence. And you can bring a reputation evidence, but you got to lay a predicate though. So it can't be that, the way you describe it, if you have instances of him having done violent acts, then you can bring up his reputation for violence. And that could be used as a defense that, a lot of times though, in by Florida law, the person who pulled the trigger, the person who did the killing, would have to know of that reputation for violence. So it can't be they just have a reputation for violence out there and you didn't know about it, but you knew about their reputation for violence. You knew that they carried a gun on, you knew that they were super violent and they would use that gun. That goes into what your state of mind was at the time you pulled the trigger, and then that can be used as a defense, or use it in your defense in the case. So we don't seem to have that. They were strangers. It doesn't seem like reputation evidence will come up necessarily in the trial. But in terms of any kind of sentencing, he is not a sympathetic defendant. You know, I don't know if you don't bring up the victim's criminal record in the sentencing. Oh, he got 10 felonies. That doesn't have a whole lot to do with what happened. But the fact that he was beating on Carlicia goes a long way. So even if it had gone a different way and they had been prosecuted, at least the 14 had been prosecuted, I think it matters a lot that the 14-year-old was not out committing crimes. He doesn't have a prior record. He reacted like most people would. So even if you go to the letter of the law that he was guilty of a crime of some sort, it's very mitigating that he hasn't had any issues with the courts and that he was under pressure to protect his mom. And I think everybody can understand that. That's really gets down to the gist of it. Even if they charge the kid, you're going to put that in front of a jury, right? They might follow that a lot. They might say, you know what? He followed him out. He shot him 2 times. That's murder. We got it. But if I'm the defense attorney, I've done defense work too, by the way. I left the state after 10 years, did 5 years of my own, and then went back, back now. But man, I'll be jumping up and down on that, right? The state's trying to move this assailant. This guy is beating up somebody over a burger or whatever they're arguing about, punched him multiple times, and now this kid reacted. And you're expecting him to put that threat down and then somehow be sober enough and cold enough to say, oh, okay, the threat is over. Nah, he's probably still rushing out on a gentleman. So that goes on. He's trying to make sure that person does not return and do anything harm to his mom. I think that's a valid argument. And ultimately, I would find it difficult for a jury to convict that 14-year-old. But so there you go.
Yeah. Are you now in today's society that people are picking up the phone to record faster than to call 911? Because people were there, but
I saw that and I heard it. And I was starting to question my own manhood. Like,
you're watching Coaching After Dark with Auntie Isha, CA, Reese, and Coach Kim. We're the morning show for night shifters. Hey, night shifters.